Today with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to have you back. I hope you're well. I hope you, again, people are still sending me where you're listening. Keep doing that, by the way. But yeah, it's good to be back. This is going to be our last programme kind of this season, although it's going to get confusing, but basically we're off next week. It's probably the easiest way of putting it. So we're having a week off next week because I'm over on the Isle of Man doing a little bit of work and doing a few bits and pieces. But you never know, because Ryan's away on Barbados. I'm over on the Isle of Man, and I'll have my little recorder, and Ryan's got his little recorder. So you never know what we're going to come back with the following week. But one thing we are definitely going to come back with the following week is there's no show without Punch, and there's no Punch without Judy. And I guess now you call him the and in that. The and in that is now Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tony. That was very wordy, but well played. Congratulations.
Did you see what I did there?
Yeah, that was well played. Well done.
I'm a wordsmith when I need to be. I've got that little bit of magic when I need it. Anyway, Jack Bennion, of course, now a permanent fixture of the programme. It would be odd not having you there now. It's almost as odd not having you there as not having Ryan there. Ryan is now on an aircraft as we record this podcast, but we did grab him for 10 minutes, which you'll hear at the end of the podcast anyway. He gave us any other business because that's all he had time to do before he got called onto his aircraft. He does live the life that we all envy. I think it's fair to say.
He's a rallying Bond, isn't he? That's weird.
He is. So he's off to Rally Barbados, and he's done a little bit of a report of what's happened on Rally Barbados over the weekend, and it's quite apt, really, because the way they do things over there, they have the King of the Hill thing, and they have a qualifying, basically, of the running order. And so I'm not going to tell you too much about that. Ryan's going to tell you all about that at the end of the podcast. But at this point of the programme, as you're probably used to now, like I think you're used to by now, we always talk headlines and what's been going on in the news. We do a few little rumours and everything else, and the big story this week, 2-3 in MN, I get used to this now, Jack, 2-3, I know is a big deal for you guys, is Rally GB goes back to England.
That's right, yeah, it's big news this week. We've got GB back in England for the first time since 1999. Granted, it's a Cholmondeley Castle stage, it's basically replacing Churk from last year, so it's, in the grounds of a big castle. But yeah, great for it to be back in England for the first time since 1999, I think, Cheltenham Racecourse. So big news, and there's a few other mixtures happening on it as well with the route. We've got Clackaynog on Sunday, and we've also got Penperthog on Saturday. So it's going to be really interesting to see the route mixed up. And I know Meherrin's being used differently. First time since 1995, we're going to get all the hairpins in. So it's a lot of changes to the route, but they like to keep it exciting each year, don't they? And it looks like they've done a decent job.
Yeah, does it look like that as well that possibly Sweet Lamb could be running the other direction as well? Have I got that right?
Yeah, there's definitely a change to Sweet Lamb, and there's so many changes, it's difficult to keep up with, to be honest. But the only thing I'm a little bit upset about is that Great Orme won't be running this year, which is something I like, and it's a place that's quite local to where I grew up, so I've got a lot of nice memories. But you know, there's plenty of other things added that make up for it, I guess.
Should I speak as a rally podcast host, or should I speak as a competitor when I talk to you about the Orme stage?
Which I can imagine.
What would you prefer?
I can imagine what the mood would be for each, but I want to hear competitor. I want to see a guns out
competitor is from a point of view, I suppose, as a very, very tiny, small privateer, there is nothing more nerve-wracking than going into the Orme stage as your last stage with big curbs, knowing that your 3.5 days' worth of work could be absolutely ruined in a split second. And I know before there's people probably screaming, possibly maybe just slightly raising the voice on a bus, I don't know. They could be screaming, they could be on their own. But they could be getting, that's all part of rallying, and it is all part of rallying, and I completely and utterly appreciate that. But by the same token, you know, you are running on, normally at that point, you're running on very, very worn gravel tyres, which some would say would be a help to you. But the Orme curbs are very unforgiving, very unforgiving. But from a spectator point of view, I got it when we did the finish in Llandudno Town Centre. It was probably slightly confusing, the fact that last year it wasn't the last stage. We kind of went there and then we went to Brennig. So it kind of like it was shoehorned in for the sake of being shoehorned in. I think it makes far more sense to run that stage when it's got the Llandudno finish. That's just my two pennyworth on it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just, while you were talking there, I've just double checked, and it is, it's Meherrin, Sweet Lamb, and Hafren will all run the opposite direction. So you're right about Sweet Lamb. It's those three that'll run the opposite direction. But yeah, any going back to the Great Orm, any stage that can catch out Sebastian Ogier is a good testing piece of tarmac, isn't it? So, you know, it should be running.
Well, nearly caught me out once or twice, to be fair, but still, I'm not comparing myself to Sebastian Ogier. Of course I'm not. But I think interesting times are upon us, and you know, we keep talking about this, and I know the guys are working incredibly hard with the Rally for Wales efforts as well, and you know, there's still more of that story, I think, to come out as well, and you know, it's refreshing and it's positive to hear that Rally GB is announcing its route and everything else, but we need to get a definitive kind of answer of what's going to go on for the Rally for Wales efforts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's plenty still coming out, and I've written my column on it this week about what I expect to happen over the next week or so, maybe even. But it is a big positive that we've got people in the government elected now and in their place, and they can start doing work with their constituents, and also hopefully trying to push this deal through between the MSA and NRW to give us Forest Rallying in Wales, which is something we obviously need. It's really important for the sport in as a whole that we get rallying in Wales, and not just at a GB level, but also at a national level, because that's what creates the grassroots that makes GB possible. So, yeah, testing times ahead, and chances are, when you listen to this show, the master agreement between MSA and NRW will have expired. So there won't be any Forest Rallying in Wales after that, any new rallies coming in until that deal is signed, I don't think. So interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks, but we'll keep our ears out, and hopefully Jamie Edwards can come back on the show and give us a bit more of an update about what he's doing.
Yeah, we'll have a chat with Jay, I'm sure we will. And I think you know, I think all our concerns is that there is some common ground found, and it's not just a case of somebody putting that £300,000 in that they're talking about being the shortfall, because I think if that happens, I think while it'll appease some people short term, I think the bigger picture, the knock-on effect for England and for Scotland as well, would be catastrophic, because that's what's going to happen because England and Scotland won't put the shortfall in. And I think the bigger picture is we need to find a proper solution rather than just somebody just putting the £300,000 in and telling all concerns to just go and get on with it. That's my concern about it anyway.
Absolutely, yeah, like, you know, that's pretty much what I've said in my column this week, and also the fact that we don't know how much NRW pay to private contractors to repair the roads. So until we know that, we don't know whether Rally is getting a fair deal in terms of how much it costs to repair the roads and whether it could be done a lot cheaper. So that's something that needs to be worked in, and like you say, you know, it could be catastrophic if they just write that £300,000 off, because it sets a worrying precedent.
Most definitely. Now, ironically, I mentioned, obviously we wanted to mention that anyway, but moving on, is that we get to our next headline, which is 13 countries confirmed WRC interest. I found this one fascinating.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's so many countries. I mean, I've got a list here.
Rattle through.
Abu Dhabi, Canada, Chile, Croatia, India, Japan, Jordan, Korea, Malaysia, New Zealand, Northern Ireland, Russia and Turkey, all involved in the running of wanting a WRC event, which, you know, we spoke about this briefly last week, didn't we, about how, you know, the WRC is obviously on high, and these countries wanting to come in and have an event really shows the strength of the championship. But the worry we've got is that we're going to lose some of our, maybe some of our founding events that are really important to the fans in exchange for some events that maybe aren't so popular a bit further afield, because maybe they bring more money to the championship, or maybe they offer a different challenge, which is something, you know, Formula One fans have seen with some of their events, and we've lost some really good events in Formula One to some far flung events that maybe aren't as good. So it's a really exciting time and a really worrying time all at the same point.
Yeah, we were hoping. I did reach out, and I did speak to Bobby Willis earlier today, and unfortunately he was a little bit tied up, because for this story alone, I would have been fascinated to hear from his perspective. And you know, if you're a rally fan, you've not heard Bobby getting excited about his events, which is obviously the Circuit of Ireland, and you, where have you been? But he would be a very, very good person. He speaks very candid with regards to his efforts in towards getting his events into the WRC, and also how you must almost always aspire to get your events into WRC. And it would have been fascinating to get him on as part of the programme on the back of this story. But I, again, it would be interesting to see. I wonder if there is, if obviously there's always FIA officials, I think, going out and looking at events, and you know whether there was any out on Circuit of Ireland. I don't know. I'd be surprised if there wasn't.
I believe there was.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't. You know, FIA going out and having a look at where they're at the moment. I wonder who's falling short. I think that would be the one that I find really, really interesting. What events are in the calendar now that you would look at and say, realistically, you're not cutting the mustard, so you're going to be dropped? I'm struggling to think of one. I think the only one that screams out to me, and I could get links for this one, is the one that people seem to have the biggest issue with is and it's not for any other reason other than the fact of the logistics of it, is Corsica.
Yeah, it's Corsica's one of those synonymous events with rallying, isn't it? And one of those really important events that the competitors love to do. Obviously missing off the calendar for some time and came back. But logistics is always it's something you know a lot about and can cause a lot of problems to the crews and teams. But I guess the event has got to make it worthwhile for the teams to, you know, putting the money in to get there and you know, putting the effort in. But the way I put it into perspective, this story is the fact that you've got 13 countries confirmed, and we've got a set calendar of 14 events. So effectively, all the events on the calendar are under threat, aren't they? You know, you can try and pick one out, but you know, we've got 13 countries trying to come in here, and we've got a set 14 event calendar that's agreed with FIA to keep the cost down for the teams, and that's not likely to rise. So we have effectively got everyone on the calendar fighting for their place, haven't we?
There's one event that ultimately I would say doesn't have to fight for it within reason. That's Monte Carlo.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. You know, the fact that it's been a mainstay for so long.
Well, they lost it once, didn't they? Went to IRC.
Did drop onto the IRC. So you know, it has been a mainstay for most of rallying history. But I think that proves that, you know, the fact that it dropped to the IRC, that it's not set.
Yeah. Anyway, just moving on from that, I wanted to pick up on this next headline as well. Capito against WRC points change.
Yeah, so there was a meeting with the WRC promoter last week. One of the things that was raised there was that manufacturers had three cars in a team with two classified finishers. So basically, you've got three cars with three drivers, and the two best score points. So that's something that Capito's come out with and said that it'll harm young drivers coming in, because we'll get a return to the sort of mid-2000s where we had a lot of specialists for each surface coming in. Peugeot's one with Harry Rovenpera and Joe Panizzi, and Citroën later had Loeb, McRae and Sainz, didn't they, on the same team. So Capito's arguing that will stop young drivers coming through and will force manufacturers into using specialists on different surfaces, if you like. But we've also got Michel Nando in there, who says this is a good idea because it forces teams to bring out new cars. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, because we have currently got, you know, Hyundai and Volkswagen running three cars anyway, haven't we? So, you know, it's a two sides of the story.
I suppose we mentioned at the top of the program, we were talking about Peugeot, of course, their super team almost. I know you've just made reference to it for Citroën there, but you know, Peugeot always had, you know, the perfect driver lineup, and they did have specialists coming in and out. Yeah. And I know the sport's changed, but we are getting back to the realms of, I suppose, where we were with the manufacturer interest back then. And I don't know, you know, drivers found the way in, and this is the thing, drivers, you know, if I suppose cream always rises to the top and drivers find the way in. And you know, we look at what's going on with R5 at the moment, and you know, drivers are definitely coming in and you know, earning the stripes there. You look at people like, you know, I suppose Elvin Evans is a classic example of a very, very fast man in an R5 car, which I think probably half the WRC paddock would probably take a punt at Elvin now. And I think come the end towards last year, they perhaps wouldn't have been that many. So, you know, there's an argument that R5 does fill that gap, because I think way back when the gap from PWRC up to WRC was huge. It was a huge jump to jump from a Group N car into a World Rally car. And you know, some would argue now, oh, the R5 to WRC is a big jump. Yeah, it is a big jump, but it's a tiny jump compared to a Group N Subaru or Evo and getting into a fully blown World Rally car. It's a huge, huge jump. So maybe the jump isn't as big as what it once was, but again, we're speculating what the 2017 cars are going to be as well, of course, and that brings up a whole different problem then, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you look at current events now, you know, you've got people making the argument that it's a properly driven R5 by a, you know, if you like, a works entry with a works driver. It's not actually, but, you know, that's kind of what it is, isn't it? You know, Elvin is good enough to be a works driver, and M Sport are running his R5. And, you know, he'll beat WRC cars on events. He has done and will continue to do so. But the question there is, you know, if they are close together, that final sort of third, that final bit of speed that you find, that's going to be the difficult part, isn't it? It's a difficult one, but I do think I completely agree with you that the R5 is much closer to a WRC pace. What we're going to get now is the step up from R5 to the 2017 WRC cars becoming quite vast, I think, and the pace is going to be a lot different there. So whether it still works in the same way, we can only wait till we get 2017.
I suppose it's a question of whether we get WRC1 now, isn't it, with the 2016 cars?
That's true, yeah, but I see another problem in that, in the sense that, you know, the guys aren't going to keep building those cars. Those 2016 cars are pretty much set. We've got quite a few out there now, obviously, as it is, but, you know, there's never going to be more than sort of 15 of those cars available at any one point, and they are going to be crashed. They are going to, you know, some of them are going to be not so competitive, so people aren't going to want to drive them. So, you know, is there enough cars out there to make that sustainable? I'm not so sure, but, you know, maybe someone will argue with me on that.
No, because they will be quite expensive to run, of course.
That's the other thing as well,
an R5 car. That's the, obviously, R5 was brought in due to cost implications because so, Super 2 cars were really, really expensive to run. And I suppose we could end up in the same realms there of you know, private teams trying to run a WRC1 car, if we can call it that for the time being. We'll put that title on it, is whether it's going to be cost effective for a team to run it. And then we're in the realms of who's an amateur driver. That's the other thing.
That's a good point that you raised there, because if we believe what we've heard so far, that, you know, maybe we're not going to get a super license, but the FIA are going to have to approve the guys who get into the 2017 cars, are we going to see a lot of sort of the home guys who turn up, and you know, with all due respect, are amateur drivers? They're not, you know, they're not professional in the championship. You know, are they going to be allowed 2017 cars? If they're not, they're going to have the money to run the WRC1 cars, and they're going to take some of the seats away. So that number again of small number of WRC cars that are going to be available, you know, you call them WRC1 cars, so there's a small number of them available, and you've got the gentleman drivers, if you like, who are going to come in on their national rally and they want to compete, you know, they're going to take some of the seats away. So that's another barrier of making it sustainable, in my opinion.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and class touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Now listen, we want to go to R5 now, and the reason I want to go to R5 is I'm quite excited by this. A friend of the show, Seb Marshall, sitting with Kevin Abring, who of course he didn't have the best of times the other week, along with many other high-end drivers, unfortunately, but they're debuting the new R5 car on Ypres.
They are. It's going to run at Ypres. It's going to run under the VIP car regulation, which is basically an FIA rule which allows them to run. We saw the Fiesta R5 and the 208 T16 run at Ypres, didn't we, in the same year on that regulation. So, it'll be nice to see them out. They won't appear in the overall classification, so if you're watching timing, they won't appear. But, they'll be there checking their times against the other guys who are going to be there. And Ypres is one of them events that always attracts a lot of top-level R5s and a lot of good drivers, isn't it? So it'd be a good opportunity for Hyundai to benchmark that car and get some important...
That's one rally I would love to do. I came very close to doing it this year. It was so close to doing a deal to go and do that rally this year, and it fell over due to the fact that we went BRC. But if we weren't going BRC, that would have been one of the events we were doing. But hey ho, maybe next year. But
it's the same for me, but taking me pen rather than the car.
Now, of course, we perhaps haven't done it justice. Normally, we'd have a driver on preview in the event, but we're certainly going to have somebody on after the event. It's the next round of BRC this coming weekend, and it's. Azores, which is, if we talk about logistical nightmares, Azores was one that always seems to stick out for me when I was working with some of the private teams trying to get them there. There was definitely some headaches and horse manure, shall we say, that we had to go through and things that we had to go through to get drivers there. But Chris Ingram, of course, our man in the junior ERC, is going to be out for his first time on gravel.
It is. I mean, Azores, like you say, is one of them logistical nightmares. But for me, it's it's one of them silver lining type situations where if you've watched any videos or any seen any pictures of what the Azores actually looks like when you're rallying there, it's incredible. But yeah, Chris is going to be back out. He's in the Works Opel Adam RT this year. He won the event last year in the juniors in a Peugeot, so he's in the Opel for the first time on gravel. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, there's been a debate about how that car's going to perform against other cars on gravel, and we've only seen it sort of three or four times, maybe on proper international events, if you like, where we've seen equal drivers going up against each other in it. But we saw Rob Duggan in the BRC recently winning Carlisle, and it's clearly all right on gravel. So it'd be nice to see how Chris gets on. He's got some good teammates and some good competition in that event. You know, Steve Rock. Auckland's got a Fiesta R2T for that event, and Lucas Pienicek is someone else we've talked about quite a bit, who's leading the championship. So he's got plenty of competition there, but it'd be, hopefully Chris, you know, he's won there before, so home hopes, British hopes will be open that he can
absolutely
win again.
It's the quality entry is one that is always left, you're left scratching your head a little bit, where's it all going to come from? But there's 27 R5 cars entered on Azores, which I find we talk about where do entries come from, where will all this money come from and everything else, but again, you know, it's not an easy event to get to, and there's 27 cars that are entered on it, and it's a serious commitment to that particular championship. Yeah. But it's almost Kajan's kind of championship to lose now. He's already got a comfortable lead. It's not quite the kind of lead that Seb Ogier's enjoyed in WRC, but he's more than comfortable in that championship already.
Yeah, Kajan's really got a good early start, but we saw in Acropolis the last round that it doesn't always go to plan. He rolled on the first stage, so he is touchable. It's just a case of whether anyone else can challenge, and although I am really looking forward to seeing Chris go up against the other juniors this weekend, one of the battles I'm really looking forward to seeing how well Ralph Samachis comes up against Kaitan. Ralph's won the Acropolis in his first event in an R5 car. He was runner-up in the ERC juniors last year, and it was his first event. He's in a Skoda Fabia R5, and won the event. So it'd be interesting to see how he can, in his second event in R5, whether he can really take it to Kaitan, because we didn't see that head-to-head battle that we might have seen otherwise because of Kaitan's role on the first.
I say one thing that I find really, really interesting as well with regards to ERC. Like no other championship, there seems to be more and more DS3s or Citroen DSR5s appearing, and you know, nowhere else do they appear. They seem to be popping their head up. And obviously we got two in, and we did have three now almost in BRC. But they seem to be coming thick and fast now into ERC.
Yeah, they do, don't they? We do seem to have quite a high number. There's people like Roberto Consani who's got a Citroen, and it is strange that you don't see so many in other championships, isn't it? But maybe that's why. Maybe they're just the people in the ERC are really into the Citroens and can get a hold of them. And there's, you know, I'm not sure how many has been built, to be honest, but I know there's nowhere near as many as the Fiestas and stuff. So it's a bit of a magnifying glass on them. There's just a fair few more in that championship.
Very nice way of putting it. Well, very nice way. And do you want to tell you something else? I've learned. You know, I'm always fascinated by what cars are still technically homologated. And I can only assume that there's been a life extended. I know there is for even though I'll use my car for example. It's not out of homologation for WRC, but it's still, you've still got plus 4 or 5 years in international rallies, so we're good for ERC. But I've just noticed, looking at the entry list, there's still Saxos and Peugeot 106s on the entry list, which I was staggered by, and a Fiat Punto as well. I didn't realise they were even still homologated.
No, I think I would presume they're part of the national rally, but
possibly what it is. Come to think of it, I must admit, I was looking at the classifications thing, and how do they fall into that? But probably go.
But the Yeah, if you look at the second round entry list, they were all the cars were put on that, weren't they? And even though it had DRC headings at the top and stuff, most of the cars were on it. So maybe it's just the thing with the entry list. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyway, speaking of tarmac, speaking of the black stuff, and we're not talking Guinness, but we are going to talk Ireland, and we're going to talk about a man that I got quite giddy about, and there's a half page in MN this week with regards to Eugene Donnelly. He's back to Donegal.
Yes.
Come on, Eugene.
That's great. Well, yeah, I interrupted you last week, didn't I? Getting excited about this and got a bit excited myself. But it's really, I love putting retro pictures on the pages of MN. It really, it's something that I really enjoy. And getting his Fabia from 2009 on there, and there's even a shot of James Cullen as well, and that's really good. But yeah, Eugene, I spoke to him last Tuesday actually, not long after we recorded. Well, it was before the show actually, and he was telling me all about how being involved in Craig's Circuit of Ireland deal has really urged him back into rallying. If you don't know how that came about, Lakeland Tyres, which is a company that Eugene's heavily involved in, sponsored Craig, and an hour before the entries closed to the Circuit of Ireland, they got the go ahead, and Eugene was really key in helping that deal come together, and he's worked with Craig for a few years, so that really spurred Eugene back on. And I think he's been out, he's not done any full competition really for a few years now, and he's definitely not done Donegal since 2009, so I think he's itching a little bit and wants to get back out and do some big events. So it'd be nice to see him out, and he's in a Mini WRC, so that's another car that's always nice to see.
Absolutely,
back out.
Absolutely. You know what, that picture has took me straight just thinking of Eugene in most of his cars, and I have to say, and I have to thank one of his sponsors, because one of his sponsors, a company called Sligo Pallets, guy's name was Andrew, and he basically got me to Ulster in 2002. He paid half my entry to go to Ulster when I was with VW in 2002, and I ran Sligo Pallets on the wings of my car, the only time I did it, but without him I wouldn't have been there. And he's a man who's put so much, I'm trying to think of his surname, but the guy who owns is Andrew, and he sponsored, I think, the National Tarmac Championship over there, or one of the National Forestries over there as well, but put so much into various people's rallying Sligo Pallets. I think even a couple of other people have ran it on it. He always likes to have it on the wings. If you ever look at any cars he's backed, he's always had it on the wings.
Yeah. Is it Andrew Mullin?
Andrew Mullin, yeah. Top bloke.
They sponsor a championship now over in Ireland.
I think Gary Jennings has also ran Sligo Pallets as well at some point as well. But he's put so much into it, and he's a man who supported me when I was doing British Championship with Volkswagen back in 2002. Yeah, they paid half the entry, and I put around with Sligo Pallets on the wings, and there you go. All from bumping into him in a shop in Liverpool. True story that. But anyway, there you go. A couple of other bits and pieces, I suppose, we want to rattle through. We were looking at the all lady crew. Is it all lady crew or all girl crew? Who's going to be? They did plan to debut on the Circuit of Ireland, but they're now going to be out on Ypres. So tell us a little bit about that one, Jack.
Yeah, Katie Munnings is someone who's been trying to get into she has been in a rally car for a while now, and her dad's Chris, who's quite well known in rallying circles, competing in Belgium in the late 80s and early 90s, but she's planning to compete at Ypres with a Santiloc 208R2. So if you ever speak to Katie, she's really excited, and she loves her rallying to pieces. She's really forward thinking, and she's very clever with PR and stuff like that. So it's nice to have someone like that representing Britain abroad. And I know she's going out to do a She's either out testing now or next in France, in South France, and then she's doing a pre-Prest, and then they'll be out there for their debut. But she's got her signatures together in the UK with a few national events, and now she's ready to go pretty much. So it'd be great to see how she gets on, and like I say, great person to be representing Britain abroad.
Cool stuff. Right, before we go to, I'm kind of ready for my only other business, to be honest. Are you ready for my only other business? Okay. Yeah, I think it'll fit quite well because the rules were, and Ryan talked about this as well at the end of the program, is that if it's got rally people involved, we can talk about it. And of course, it was around of the World Rallycross Championship at Lyddon.
Yes.
And I'm going to say it just for a giggle because I think it's the law, by the way, Jack, in case you're unfamiliar. If you say the word Lyddon, you have to say the Spiritual Home of Rallycross straight afterwards. It's kind of part of the law.
Okay.
It's been said somewhere. I watched the coverage, and obviously I know Neil and I know Andrew really, really well, and I don't know the lady who presents him, but the doing the legs stuff like that. But yeah, there was lots of references to the spiritual home rallycross, which did make me smile, because I too had to do that job when I was doing British rallycross, and it was kind of part of the script that just made me smile so much. But anyway, there was a fair few ex-rally guys there. Obviously, we had Sebastian Loeb there, we had Petter Solberg there, Guy Wilkes, again, we can throw into that mix as well. And it was the man Ekstrom, which just kind of shook everybody up after Petter pretty much dominated.
Yeah, well, you know, you forgot one other person who was there, a really important rallying person who you forgot to mention, me, obviously.
I lost you there, Jack. Sorry, mate. What was that?
You've gone quiet. Excellent. Yeah, I was there on Sunday, and you know, there was a real vibe about the place. That Solberg had everything in the bag. You know, he was so quick in the heats and in the semi final as well. And you know, there was a real air of inevitability about with the crowd and stuff. You know, it was just all, you know, Petter's ran away with it. It's all done. But I think Ekstrom's puncture earlier in the day had really masked how quick he was, and he beat Bakkerud, didn't he, and came through to win the event. So great to see Ekstrom. It's great to see Ekstrom win again. Obviously, he's a really, really talented guy who crosses across, you know, all sorts of platforms in terms of motorsport, and you know, that car's really sorted, and he's really sorted in it. So it's good to see. It was a good event, and you know, the track's amazing. It really is. What a fantastic place!
Yeah, it's had so much put into it, and you've got to give credit to the Durans for the amount of work that they've put in. You know, obviously Liam was competing, but his dad is a bit of a rally and rallycross legend, I suppose, in this country, you've got to say. And you know, they've put so much in, and they're working so hard to try and get more going on. I know they're fighting certain things at the moment to try and get more investment and build new things, and they're having a bit of a tough time of it. But again, you know, credit to them, the fact that they've made Lydon what it is today, because, you know, it certainly wasn't like that, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and it is a place that is befitting of a World Championship rallycross event. But I watched the live coverage, and it was great to watch and everything else. And again, we mentioned Matthias Ekstrom, of course, who's a man who crosses over the disciplines, it's fair to say, but he's leading the championship now, and he's making Petter's job a little bit more honest, I think, this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's, like I say, that package is really together, car and driver working really well, and you know, that puncture really, I think, really did mask how quick he was. Petter's still there, and I wouldn't write him off. He wasn't. He was a bit upset after the final, admittedly, that, you know, that effectively, well, not thrown it away, but, you know, he'd been beaten by Ekstrom, even though he'd been quickest of the weekend by quite a margin. But one thing I'm really interested to see is Bakkerud in that Fiesta, because that car is, you know, designed by Christian Loriot. It's not going to be a bad car.
Focus, young man.
Yeah. I'm still in rally mode. Sorry. Yeah, it's designed by Christian Loriot, so it's not going to be slow. And they had a few issues in the final. I think they had a drive shaft failure in the final. But it sounds incredible. It looks incredible, and there's only a matter of time before that's winning.
Andreas is such a good guy as well. I don't know if you spent any time with him, but Ryan and I spent a bit of time with him in the last round of the British Rallycross, and then he came on the program, and he's good value as well. He's good. It didn't shock me when he turned up with Ken Block, because out of all the drivers, he was a perfect fit, and I can see why he was chosen. I really can. And top boy. Anyway, that's the end of our section. That was my Any Other Business. We did World Rallycross, and we mentioned it, and we've mentioned World Rallycross, and we've mentioned Ryan and I also spoke about TT stuff. So you'll hear that a bit later on as well. So we've kind of crossed three different sports all in one podcast. How good's that, by the way? So, Jack, that's it. You and I are going to cross over. We're going to talk to Frederick Arlen, and then once we've done that, we're off then. We can check out, and we'll go, that's it, and we'll have a week off, and I'll go and watch some bikes. Ryan's going to go and watch some rally cars, and you're going to go and watch it, probably everything, and then tell us all about it the week after next.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jack. Catch up with you soon.
Right.
And we're going to cross over now to Frederick Arlen, and listen to what Jack and I had to say to Frederick. Not for the first time, it has to be said, but for the second time in 2 weeks.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @absolute_rally.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to Absolute Rally for a second time. He was with us last week, which was the programme that was never actually recorded, and we thank him again for joining us again. Frederick Carlin, welcome back to Absolute Rally for a second time.
Hello, and thank you very much.
Now, listen, we do appreciate you coming back, but you're currently in an airport, so you're killing time. Has this been a little bit of business, or have you been working away somewhere?
I've been doing both things. I was first of all working for Audi in Denmark last week, and then I flew down to the Monaco to the Formula One and had a weekend there with some friends and watched on Formula One, and yeah, had a good time off work and rallying for some days.
It's a tough life, isn't it, Frederick, that you lead?
It's a really tough life. No, for sure. I'm living a dream, which I think a lot of guys would like to do, so have to be very happy for that.
Absolutely. I'm surprised that your team boss, Martin Wilkinson, who I was with last week, just prior to him departing for Barbados, didn't manage to get you over to Barbados. Was that an option?
Yeah, actually, he called me and said if I would like to come, I could actually join him, but I need some days home now before Scotland, so it's okay.
Okay, perfect. You mentioned Scotland. We'll come back and talk about your win on the Pirelli shortly, because we've got Jack with us, of course, who is the man who kind of wrote your autobiography almost for you last week in Motorsport News. So I want to come back to that. But with regard to Scotland, how is preparations going for Scotland?
No, it's going all right. I mean, we had a quite good debrief after the Pirelli rally, what we would like to do with the car to try and improve it, to make it even quicker and better, and going to do some small changes to the car, I think, on the setup before Scotland, and then hopefully we can be even more competitive there.
Good man. Now, as I say, we've got Jack with us, and Jack wrote all about you last week, but for some of our listeners who didn't hear, or rather didn't read, some of the bits and pieces that he wrote about you, I thought it'd be quite nice for them to recap on a couple of things. So, Jack, over to you.
Oh, thanks very much, Tony. Hi, Frederick. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. And how are you, Ek?
Good. Yeah. Nice to speak to you again. And it's been a week now since our paper came out, and your story's been revealed to the people in Britain. So it's been it's gone down really well, and it was lovely to do the piece on you. But let's just recap a few things from the year so far for the people who maybe didn't pick the feature up. One thing that maybe surprised a few people was Mid Wales, which was the first round of the British Rally Championship, and Elvin Evans has been the favourite since he signed up to do the championship. But you turned up and you gave him a good run for his money, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's Mid Wales was a really, really good rally for us. Rally Sweden already, we had a good fight with Elvin, but I mean that was on my home soil. Unfortunately, we picked up some problems with the car throughout the rally, and then in the end we broke the steering arm on the, I think, second last stage, so we had to retire. But then we came to Mid Wales with absolutely no expectations, just wanted to have a clean, nice weekend and get some good points for the start of the year. And in the end, we were a lot more competitive than we or I thought we would be. And from that point, I mean, the self-confidence became bigger, and then we just kept on working harder and harder for every rally, and it seems like it's getting better and better also.
Yeah, it seems like you've improved massively, and definitely the second rally of the year, the Circuit of Ireland, was kind of a bit of a shock to you, wasn't it? Because you'd come from many years of not really competing on tarmac, and definitely not in four-wheel drive machinery competing on tarmac, and your pace was very good to start with, wasn't it, from the start of the weekend?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest shock. But also, I mean, I already told this before, Jack, that when you have a team like, say, One Sport behind you, and they know exactly what they need to help you to prepare yourself for a new challenge. And Martin gave me a really, really good two-day test ahead of the circuit, and got a lot of seat time. Also, really good support from Pirelli with the tires. So they really gave me a tire which I enjoyed and I felt comfortable with. And that's I think Martin told me one thing, because I was a little bit stressed before circuit that my pace wouldn't be good, and he said a good drive always is always good, so just relax and enjoy and go out and see where you are. And as you say, the pace was very good.
Yeah, Martin's someone who's helped you a lot with your sort of mentality and stuff at the start of the year, hasn't he? Because you have had, you've shown very good pace through last year and through many years of your career, but sometimes it's just not come together for you, has it? So Martin's been someone who's really been there for you, hasn't he, when times haven't been quite right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I started working with Martin in 2014, and at that time I was, even though it's only 2 years ago, I think a lot have happened with, especially with my mentality and how I prepare for every rally, and I know now in which frame of mind I need to be to perform well. And Martin is helping me a lot to try and keep me relaxed. And I think that's why we have very consistent results and not doing too many mistakes at the moment.
Well, yeah, talking of not doing too many mistakes, the third round of the British Rally Championship was the Pirelli Carlisle, wasn't it? And that one went really well for you, although it was a bit of an up and down weekend. You managed to keep it all together and take the win, didn't you, in the end?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really, really happy with that. For sure, it was a little bit of a different thing to be quickest on stage number one and actually not being quickest because of the rules with the MSA. I never heard about it before, and it was a bit of a shocker, but I think we still kept our heads cool. And after Elfin's puncture, we knew we were if we just kept it on the road and didn't do it any mistake, we would probably be able to come home with a win. And was really important for the championship. I mean, that win will open up everything, and I mean, we're leading the championship now also, which is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, beating Elfin is something that not many people seem to be able to do at the moment, and Elfin's got such a good reputation worldwide. Is that something that's really worked for you this year? I mean, you know, you've come to the British Rally Championship to try and improve your pace on different kind of rallies and try and learn a bit more, but you've also, you know, you've managed to beat Elfin, who's got a brilliant reputation worldwide. So is that something that you think's maybe boosted your reputation a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I've always had a reputation being a quick driver, but problems been that I've probably just been pushing a little bit too much sometimes and done the mistakes. This year it seems like, or I know we have, it's like I told you, we have the package together now. I mean, everything from the team to me and Morten to the car. We have good support from Pirelli, from different other sponsors, and it just, when you have a good package, everything works. And I think that's so important to understand. It's not only one part that's changed. The whole package is good now, and that's why we can challenge him, and we're going to try and keep on doing that also.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now on to my favourite part, and that's the history. I love looking back through rallying history, and you're someone who struck me straight away as being someone who's got a really cool past. You've got many people in your family who've been involved in different kind of motor racing, haven't you? Starting probably best with your granddad, Freddie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, motorsport has always been a big part of my life and the whole family. And as you say, Freddie was one of the most famous drivers back in the 70s and 80s. And he's done everything from Formula 2 to rallies to, I mean, his Paris-Dakar win. I mean, he was a guy who could just go behind the steering wheel on different cars and be very quick. And for sure, all of the stories he told me it's crazy how it was back in the days compared to now. It's almost a different sport if you compare, but really cool to have that history in my family.
Yeah, that Dakar win was quite important as well, wasn't it? Because it was the basis of what turned into the Audi Quattro four-wheel drive system that was used in the Group B cars and stuff, wasn't it, afterwards?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my grandfather was a big part in developing the new Audi Quattro, and the first test car, they actually took the whole drivetrain, everything, just from the Jeep and just put it on the rally car. And for sure, then it evolved and became a little bit better. But in the end, the basics from that car was actually used for the first four-wheel drive rally car in the whole world.
Wow. Brother, there's a couple of things I wouldn't mind asking about. I'm not quite as into my history as Jack, but I'll tell you what I'm into. And I find you talk about having your mentality right now and having people around you. How do you see somebody like Martin now? Is Martin your team boss, your engineer, your manager? How do you see him?
I see Martin as a really close friend to begin with. I mean, he's a guy who I trust a lot, and for sure he's a team boss, he's a team manager, he's also my engineer. That's the main two things which he is for me on the rallies, if you speak as about the rally itself. But then also because we have a good relationship, and I really enjoy working with him, and it's always nice to have a second part which has been there for a long time and has a, I think it's called objective look at things. And just I can speak with him about everything, and he can give me some advices. And I mean, he's been working with Colin McRae, and actually a lot of guys are telling me that I'm a little bit like Colin, maybe in some ways. He was also a really quick driver, but sometimes crashed too much. And so Martin knows how to handle a guy like that, and I think he's trying to do the same thing with me.
Fantastic. Now, we had Hayden Paddon on last week, and we had a guy called Trevor Agnew, who was on with us, who was a former production world rally champion, but he is massively into kind of mind mapping and mind coaching and things like that. Is that something that you implement now? Have you got somebody that you talk to and work with on that side?
Yeah, I have. Since 1.5 years ago, I started to work with a new guy called Lennart Augustsson from Sweden. And we have a really good relationship. We speak before every rally, and then we also have some calls throughout the weekend, and just try to keep my mind in the correct place and not stress out. And funny thing is also this guy is actually also working with both Pontus Tiedemann and Timmy Hansen and some other really good athletes from Sweden. So he knows the sport very good, and he knows which frame of mind you need to be in to perform. And he's a very big part also in my progress this year, I think.
I think it's such an untapped part of motorsport that we're only just starting to pick up on now, and it's refreshing to hear you speak and hear you say that this is something that you embrace, because I just think if more and more drivers did it, they would find that extra tenth that they will never ever find just by sitting in a rally car.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the main problem with rallying at the moment is it's very hard to get a seat time. And if you then can take away some other things which you would need to be behind the steering wheel for a long time, for example, being relaxed without being relaxed, to trick your mind being relaxed more or less is actually what you do. And it's not like I go to a sofa or a couch and lay on my back and speak about the life itself. But it's just small things. You discuss small things and you just go into it very deep, how you should prepare and how you should think when things start to go wrong. And it helps, especially, I mean, when everything is floating and you have a good rhythm, then it's no problem. The big main reason why I'm doing this and the big difference between not having a mental coach and having one is when you actually have a problem, when you have some small issues, just to go back to your training and think about what you have been speaking about to your coach, and then normally you can actually be more relaxed than you would be if you had not done it before.
In many ways, it gives your mind the kind of base setting. We always talk about base settings for the rally car to go back to, and then you build from them. But in many ways, I've found over the years that it actually gives your mind the base setting to go back to, like a reset button, and enable you to then, okay, this is what we need to go to sort this problem out.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it works. It's no hocus pocus or anything like that. It's just very, very easy things which you do. And it just, for me anyway, it made a big, big difference.
No, absolutely. As I say, I'm a big believer in it, and I find the whole subject fascinating, to be honest with you. Now, one thing before we go, and again, this is about, you know, we see you as a young driver coming through. You were definitely a very, very quick man in WRC2 over the last couple of years. And obviously, now you're embracing the British Rally Championship and in many ways forfeiting the chance to go and compete on Rally Finland to increase your commitment to the British Rally Championship. We were very impressed to see that from you. The British Rally Championship is a big deal for you, yeah?
Yeah, it's a very big deal. I mean, for sure, the title itself would be really impressive for me. And British Rally Championship has always been a very good playground for Swedish drivers before. And one thing which I was really proud of was that I was the first Swedish driver to win a BRC event for, I think, more than 20 years, which I know the guys who won before me all went on being very, very good professional drivers. And the reason why I'm not doing WC2 Finland is because we didn't have the budget to do a full WC2 season this year. And now when the chance came up to fight against Elfyn Evans, which in my opinion is the quickest guy in an R5 car in the world at the moment, and if I could actually be up there fighting with him, showing everyone else that I maybe in a couple of years deserve a spot in the WC, It's just so important for me to focus on that. So that's why we do it.
Fantastic, fantastic. Listen, Frederick, we thank you so much for joining us once again. I say that chucklingly because it is the second time, of course, you've joined us on the Absolute Rally Podcast. And we will be keeping a keen eye on you, and we'll catch up with you after Scotland, maybe.
Yeah, okay, no worries. Just give me a call. I probably is sitting at some airport somewhere and have some time for you. So just give me a call. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Frederick. Take care.
Thanks, Take Frederick.
Care. Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Cheers. And that was Frederick Arlin on Absolute Rally, and we do thank him, as ever, for joining us for a second time. Jack, we're gonna go to a cheeky break, and we'll do your any other business. I think let's do your any other business now, Jack. Let's get it out the way. Are you ready for your any other business?
Yeah, I knew you were going to throw this at me. I knew you were going to do this.
Well,
to me. I knew you were going to surprise me, but I was ready because.
That's all right, then.
My any other business is, once again, nostalgic rallying. And that'll come as no surprise to anyone who's listened to me on the show before. But I wanted to... it was a piece in MN this week that involves Gilles Panizzi. And I know, Tony, you've talked about the 206 WRC being one of your favourite tarmac cars. But one of my favourite memories from the WRC is 2002 Rally Catalunya, when Gilles decided going into, I think it was the 15th stage, he had a lead just over half a minute. He decided it'd be a good idea to do some donuts in front of the famous viaduct at the hairpin.
Yep.
And we've got a few pictures of that in MN this week that I managed to sneak in. But my only other business is remembering Mark James, friend of the show, when it was back on Eurosport back in the day, the WRC, and I remember he said, going into stage 15 with a lead of whatever it was, Gilles decided he'd give the thousands of spectators at the bridge a little treat. And I just remember that line from Mark from growing up and from watching that event. But where are those drivers now doing donuts in the middle of the stage to please the fans? That's what I want to know.
I think drivers like Gilles were unique. Just absolutely one of the kind. And of course, the always the obvious ones that jump out is the donut with Gilles, and also his little tiff, shall we say, with his teammate in service. When of course he had a fallout with I know he said Francois Duval then, it was Francois Delacour, over the alleged illegal wrecking. But they're the two things that people remember, but you forget how rapid that driver was. And again, Ryan's made reference to this a couple of times last week when we were talking about, obviously, Jos Capito's comments with regards to drivers coming in and doing one-off events and things like that. Of course, we were used to it back then. You think about the Peugeot lineup, and the Peugeot lineup back then, you know, had Marcus Grunome, it had Harry Rovanperä, it had Panizzi, and it also had Francois Delacour. Now, they didn't have full programs. They were swapped and changed around accordingly, and that was a big thing back then. But I'm very impressed by the way you got that picture in. Well then, thank you.
Yeah, it was tough, but yeah, I really enjoyed putting that in. And Jill's one of them people you can just stick into YouTube and watch any video that comes up. It doesn't matter what it is, what car it's in, you know, or preferably it's the 306 Maxi, but any of the others as well. And just watch it. The onboards really make me laugh when you can see his face and his breathing technique that he uses. You can see his cheeks sort of pumping up when he's breathing in, and he really breathes hard while he's driving. You can see the concentration on his face. It just fascinates me.
I had a little bit of a naughty session on dirt over the weekend, as it was bank holiday weekend. I set the seat up and everything else, and of course it had to be the 306 Maxi on tarmac.
Excellent on that game, isn't it? It's really realistic, and you have to throw it in, don't you, and use the handbrake. It's
love it. Anyway, Jack, this is where you depart from us now, and we're having a week off, so you've got a week off next week. You can, you know, I don't know what you'll do on your week off. What have you got? What will you do, Jack? Bit of sunbathing, or
I'll probably be in a forest somewhere and listening to something flat chat, I imagine.
Flat chat. Well, there you go. Well, I'll be on the Isle of Man listening to bikes go 200 mile an hour. If you're talking flat chat, I think that's the expression. Very apt for the Isle of Man.
You'll get to see Mr. Higgins as well, which will be an absolute treat, I'm sure.
I will. I can't wait. We Ryan and I have covered that because that was Ryan's any other business. So you will hear that at the end of the programme. But Jack, it won't be same time, same place next week. We're having an extended break, but we will be back the week after next. And I'll speak to you then.
No problem. I'll come back with details of what I did on my day off.
I look forward to it. And we're going to cross over now. We're going to talk to Brendan Reeves, who, again, a very interesting character who did the Pirelli Star Driver program. And then he did the DMAC Drive Trophy, and he's been some stuff from Rally America. And the big story is he won the last round of the Australian Rally Championship of the weekend. And of course, happened to change his gearbox. There were some pictures that we tweeted out, him underneath his car, getting his hands dirty, putting in a standard road car box that they managed to get their hands on, and he managed to go out and complete the rally. So we thought we'd get Brendan on, so we're going to cross over to Brendan. We'll have a little listen to what Brendan had to say about his weekend, and then we'll cross over to So the man who's missing, I'm sure you probably figured out by now, he's missing, but he's missing in action, so to speak. We caught him in an airport as well. We cash up with Ryan Champion with his Any Other Business at the end of the programme.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. And we've got a new guest. We've got somebody we've not had on before. It's rather surprising when you kind of look back and what he's been doing. He's been a busy man over the last probably 4 or 5 years. He's an Aussie that's been travelling. And we always assume that we think Molly Taylor when we think of Aussies and travelling in Europe. But there's been more than that. There's been Brendan Reeves. Welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time, Brendan Reeves.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on, and we've had a little bit of back and forth on Twitter. I think when we had Gus on the other week, I think it was mentioned that perhaps we should get you on then. But what really, really kind of drew me to you this weekend was the picture of you changing your gearbox on the rally and then going on and winning the rally. Just tell us a little bit about that, Brendan.
Yeah, it was quite crazy. We'd had a tough lead up to that rally and had to change a gearbox back at home in the workshop, and we got up to the event and our center diff still wasn't working. So we pulled the gearbox out on the Wednesday before the event at testing and fixed the center diff. And then the second stage at Rally of Canberra, I managed to go from fifth to second gear and blew first and second gear up. So we had to drive the next six stages, basically riding the clutch, taking off in third gear. We managed to finish second for the day, and in the 2-hour service that night, we had to put a standard gearbox in. I took off the overalls and put on my truck overalls and helped the team change the gearbox.
Do you think, I come from a little bit of a background of doing a little bit myself, but I think your mechanics do appreciate you when you know what you're doing. They don't appreciate you when you don't know what you're doing. So I'm assuming you know what you're doing when you're doing this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a big benefit to know your car very well, and I certainly know my Subaru well. Prepared it for the rally, and with help from my main mechanics, Mark and Dave. They're really good at it also. So, as soon as we finished and we're into that overnight service, you know, I want to make sure the car's 100%. And without me being underneath the car, I wasn't sure if it was going to be. So I just wanted to kick in and get it ready, because 2 hours sounds like a lot of time. But when your spare gearbox is borrowed from another team, we weren't sure how it was going to be, and it didn't have a speedo drive. So we had to pick up some kind of drive from somewhere else to make the center diff work. We couldn't get a wheel speed sensor to work, so with help from our tuner, Dwight from New Zealand, he was able to do the computer side of it, and we just did the mechanical sides, and we got the car working ready for the Sunday stages.
So the Australian Rally Championship, it's something that obviously that's where you pretty much started your career. You were 2010 Pacific Cup champion, but you've been over in Europe quite a bit recently. Obviously 2011 you were doing the Pirelli Star Driver, and then you went into WRC Academy, and then you went over to America, and then you went back to the Australian Rally Championship. It's fair to say, in true Australian terms, you've gone walkabout with your career. Are we back in Australia now? Are we focusing a bit more on the Australian Rally Championship?
Yeah, certainly back in Australia at the moment. I'd prefer to be doing the WRC, but my career just hasn't worked out that way. We really enjoyed doing those 2 years with M Sport in the academy. Being a Pirelli Star driver really opened my eyes up and allowed me to basically take my career overseas and work a lot on my commitment, and worked with my sister Rhiannon, and really enjoyed, I guess, the competition over there, and enjoyed pushing myself to be a better driver. Now I'm back working a lot more in our family business and trying to pull my weight in that. That's why I haven't done too much rallying this year. It's been my first rally since WRC Spain last year. And, yeah, we had a really good result coming out on top at the end of the weekend, but it certainly didn't come easy.
Do you feel like your career kind of, obviously, when you compete against better people, it does make you raise your bar. So for you to come back into, you know, into the Australian Rally Championship, which has got a fair few drivers in there. Obviously, we mentioned Molly at the top, but you look at people like, you know, Harry Bates, Simon Evans, you know, stalwarts of the Australian Rally Championship. So to come back, you know, first rally back, everything else, to get that win must be, was it surprising even for you?
Yeah, we didn't know how we were going to go. Basically, our car is a 2006 spec Subaru, so it's an older car, but Simon Evans is four times Australian Rally Champion, and he was in a Subaru GC8, so a really old car, but our rules here allow us to run older cars with newer drive lines, 34mm restrictor with good fuel, or you can run a 36mm restrictor with pump fuel. So I think there's newer cars like Molly Taylor's 2016 Subaru, but also my older car's competitive as well, which I think is a really good thing for juniors and making it affordable. And I knew we had pace because when we've raced different places around the world, we've always been fast. It was just getting the reliability there, and we sort of struggled with that on the Saturday, but the Sunday we come out and won the first stage and put the pressure on, which worked really well.
So, are we going to see it out on the next? I think there's three more rounds in the Australian Rally Championship. Are we going to see it out on those?
The main aim from doing this round was do this one, then Rally Australia in November. Now we've come out and won this round, we're going to focus on doing Rally South Australia in September. So the next event's Rally Queensland, the Asian Pacific event. It's only 3 weeks away, but work's a little bit busy, so I'm going to focus on that. Take the time to get the car ready the next few months, and then do Rally SA later in the year.
Fantastic. Well, listen, you were talking about regulations and things there, and you know, just looking at Mark Pedder, and he's out in the Peugeot 208 Maxi, and there's Justin Dowell in the i20 Proto. We had Hayden Padden on the program last week, and he was talking about obviously what he's done with this AP4 car over in New Zealand, obviously opening up things and getting newer body shapes out there. Is that something that Australia is trying to do as well? Is this where these cars have come from?
Yeah, Australia and New Zealand are basically mixing their rules together and trying to work together to get regulations that work for both countries. And the AP4 car, we haven't seen yet in Australia. We've seen the proto car of Justin Dowell's, which is basically Evo 10 running gear in a Hyundai i20, and the Maxi car, which is basically a cheaper version of the R5. And it has got some newer cars in the championship, which is really good. And those rules are being sorted out, so hopefully they're more a five-year long-term plan than just changing the rules constantly all the time and making it harder for competitors.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've just said you're focusing more on the family business and things now. Is the passion obviously is still there to go out and compete? Obviously, Europe is it's a long way away for you guys to come and do more. So is the focus more now on trying to perhaps win an Australian championship?
Well, 2013 and 14, we set out to do that when our championship was two-wheel drive. So we had Mazda on board, and we built a fairly fierce little front-wheel drive car with rally school backing. And we were racing against like Eli Evans and Scott Petter. 2014 was a really close year. Scott and I racing. He was in a Renault Clio G2, and I was in the Mazda 2 G2, and had a great year. But then the rules changed to four-wheel drive again. So I come out, did this one rally, and found that the competition's still as strong as ever. And I basically just wanted to get back behind the wheel because you miss it so much, and that's where I feel I belong. I do a lot of driver training at home. I've got my own sort of private racetrack, so I have people come on weekends and teach them to be better drivers or co-drivers. And I enjoy that, but I really enjoy competing myself.
I'm going to ask you one last question before you go. We had your sister's husband on the program at the top of the year, and of course Gus Greensmith is his pilot. Does it help having your sister alongside you, or is that a hindrance? Or maybe you don't want to answer that question.
No, I think it's a great benefit. Rhiannon is 8 years older than me, and we started our careers together. And when you think about pace notes, it's about telling a story in the driver's head. I can't see the co-driver in the car. They sit further back behind me, and I'm focused on the road. So how that story of the pace notes is delivered, I think, is the most important thing for the driver. And I prefer a woman's voice in my head, and I think that Rhiannon tells that story really well on the notes and the way it's delivered. I find men tend to yell a bit more, and it's a bit more of a demand. But that softer voice, I think, is easier to take in. But saying that, I've had plenty of men co-drive for me too, and they've been excellent. But yeah, it's really worked well, and Rhiannon's lightweight, which really helps too.
Yeah.
And it was great having her come back, because she was at Rally Portugal with Gus and Alex last weekend, and she flew and arrived Canberra on Tuesday and was straight in the car with me, so I kept her busy.
Fantastic. I do realise I'm going to polarise our listenership here when I say this back to you. You said that you prefer having a woman's voice in your head. There is many, many men who may not be talking about their sister, but maybe talking about their partners, their wives or whatever, who'll just be shaking their head in disbelief at that statement. But I do love the line that you've just said, and I've not heard it put like that before. Telling a story in the driver's head, it's so true. So true. What a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah, you really need to focus. And when you're in that, pressure cooking situation, like on Sunday, we had a 30-kilometre stage. It was basically the most technical stage I've ever done in my career. And when you're trying to focus and stay switched on, the more gentle that voice is, the less it's going to hype you up and raise your blood pressure and keep you concentrated. So that's how I feel about it. Everyone's got a different opinion, but it works well for me.
Fantastic. Listen, Brendan, we thank you so much for your time. We did mean to get you on a little bit soon. Obviously, Gus was at it the other week, mentioning about getting you on, maybe trying to get you on together at some point, although I'm not too sure what that would create. But
it'd probably be dangerous.
It would be. I think it would be. It's bad enough having him on his own. But no, listen, it was a great story from the weekend, as I say. It was fantastic to see a driver get his hands dirty in order to go out and get a win. And it was a great story to tell. And we thank you so much for joining us on Absolute Rally and sharing the tale with us, I guess.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love listening to it every week, driving along in my truck. It's good to hear what's happening in the world of rally.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much, Brendan. We'll catch up with you again soon. Listen, we'll speak to you a bit nearer that event you're going to be doing in September, okay?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
All the best. Thanks, Brendan.
Thanks, mate.
Take care.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766 787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. He's turned up now. He's checked in. He's finally got here. He's bothered his backside. Now, it's a bit harsh on him, but Ryan, champion, welcome to the back end of Absolute Rally. We missed you at the top, mate.
I know, I've been here for the full thing, haven't I, for the last few weeks, and here I am turning up late again.
Yeah, and in case anybody was wondering, by the way, that little vibration noise which you probably heard right at the top there was Jack texting Ryan, just to make sure, just to give you the full flavour and the full picture that we are all in constant contact anyway. But Ryan is in a departure lounge because he is off to Barbados. But as ever with Ryan, he's always got his finger on the pulse. He's going to tell us all about what's been going on Rally Barbados already, aren't you?
Yeah, so in Barbados, it's Rally Barbados next weekend. But, you know, we talk about road positioning and seeding every week in Barbados. What they do is they have a rally sprint 1 week and seed the rally on the results of the rally sprint. The following weekend, so it was as they call it, King of the Hill, just passed. Quite an exciting weekend as well, because it ended up in a dead heat. So relatively new Ford Focuses, so like 07 spec Ford Focuses, one driven by Simon John Joseph, the former Ford Works driver. So he was McRae's teammate in the original Focus. He was also a Subaru factory driver and well known for his Clio Super 1600 exploits. Simon John Joseph and Jeffrey Panton set exactly the same time. So they actually declared them as joint winners, as that had never happened before. Jeffrey Panton himself, not unknown to WRC, he did Rally GB twice in sort of work specification Toyotas, running under Toyota Team Jamaica at the time. So they took, like I said, the joint win with Elfin in third position. But interestingly, it was a 3 minute stage, and in the R5 car, he was only about a second down on the two. Focus World Rally cars, so I think he's going to be right in the mix come the rally next weekend. And then in fourth place was Rob Swan, so top Englishman, I guess. And Rob, first time out in his or actually did the warm-up rally, but Rally Barbados will be his his first real time out in his new S12. So interesting stuff. And and Kevin Proctor flying in a brand new Fiesta for the rally, which you know all about, Tony.
I know a little bit about it. I had a sleepless night or two over it, but by all accounts, it's there now. And to be fair, it looks stunning. Really nice livery. I think liveries, we forget now, just back in the day, and you and I have spoke about this in the past, but liveries we just kind of took for granted. And I think it was probably Toyota that really kind of grasped the whole livery thing. And again, I know we spoke about it before with the Corolla, I think. But no, I must admit, Proctor's Fiesta looks mighty mean in its new Proctor's livery. But I wanted to talk to you about, you've just reminded me of something, actually. We posted on our Facebook page. You've just mentioned Toyota Team Jamaica. And we put up a video of Toyota Team Europe having a wheel changing competition. I don't know whether you've seen the video yet, right?
I did see that with George Donaldson in his younger years.
I was just about to say, did you see George in it? I don't know whether he'll thank us for that, but we must get George on, you know.
Yes, we must get him on, and he can talk us through it, because George has so many interesting stories from his days at TCE, and the fact that they used to test for 6 months in Africa for the Safari Rally, and George used to head up that test team. And yeah, absolutely need to get him on and hear his interesting stories from those days.
So when we were talking about, just going back to Barbados, by the way, when we were talking about Barbados, how can you go out there and not do the rally? How does that work?
Well, if there's any rally that you don't mind going spectating on, it's got to be Rally Barbados.
Okay, that's a fair point.
And I think Chris Meek and Paul Nagle will back me up on this. Yes, it's nice to be doing it, but it's not a bad place to go spectate either.
Yeah, okay, fair dues. So that's all right then. Now, before we crack on, this is, I'll mention this at the top of the show as well, but we're not here next week because I'm over on the Isle of Man. I'm going over for the TT for the week. A little bit of business, a little bit of pleasure. Really looking forward to it. But your any other business relates to my little trip, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So during the TT week, we're going to see Mark Higgins take on the fantastic 37-mile circuit once again in a Subaru. Now, the interesting thing this time is it's a car purpose-built for the task. In the past, he used really a modified road car, a Group N car. This time, a well-known team, that of ProDrive, no less, have built an Impreza purposely for the job of going around the Isle of Man as fast as possible. And that's going to be fantastic to see. I saw some footage the other day of it testing. We'll try and put that up on our Facebook page and Twitter feed. But I'm sure Mark can't wait to do it. You know, one of the best teams in the world, North Subaru's Inside Out, have been given a budget by Subaru America to build a car to go around the TT course as fast as possible. That's going to be pretty exciting to see.
It is. Now, I was with a mutual friend of ours and a man that's kind of been around the block a little bit, and the boss of CA1. I was in a meeting with him the other week, last week as it was, and apparently he'd been talking to Mark, and Mark says it's quick.
Well, the nice thing is no restrictors, no limits on power or anything like that. So I don't know a lot about the car as such in terms of power output or anything, but it certainly looks the part, it sounds the part, and it'll be great to see what it can do.
What's quite unique, of course, and we were going to try and get David and Craig on. Now, David and Craig, David Higgins, of course, Mark's brother, and Craig Drew, of course, who's a guest of ours, who's David's co-driver, they've gone over to China to substitute for him for Subaru China. So they're doing the next round of the Chinese Rally Championship because Mark's doing this. So they've kind of had a job swap in some ways, I suppose.
Yeah, which David obviously well known in China, and you know, he's been very successful out there himself. So no stranger to China, and I'm sure he'll do a great job out there. But yeah, really exciting to see Mark on the Isle of Man, and I'm sure he won't want to make the headlines like he did a couple of years ago for these spectacular reasons. But I'm sure this will be a very quick car around the TT course.
Well, I think we spoke to him about it. Is that something like 3 million hits or something, that video? Or it's probably more now, isn't it? It's, every time I see somebody, I always say, watch that video. And it's an awesome bit of footage. But yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, everything's fine for Mark anyway. But before we crack on and before we wrap up the programme, that was your Any Other Business. But can we have an additional Any Other Business? And what are you looking forward most to on Rally Barbados?
Well, you mentioned the boss of CA1 there, Martin Wilkinson. I think I may bump into Martin this evening. They've got their 350 horsepower Escort in Barbados, driven by a local driver, Neil Armstrong. And Neil was getting to grips with that for the first time at the weekend and doing some big skids. So I'm sure he'll be really exciting to watch in that car. But it just ends up being a really, really fantastic race. The drivers all know the stages very, very well. They're all relatively short, but it means they're fighting for half a second on every stage, and literally there's nothing left. So it's quite spectacular to watch. And I have to say, the spectators, in terms of enthusiasm, are second to none. So you can't help but get wrapped up in the whole thing when you're there to watch it.
No, look, I'm looking forward. I say I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of a bit mad because like whenever you go anywhere, I'm going to be so kind of sucked into what's going on the Isle of Man and the TT and everything else. I'm probably going to forget about it almost, but I'll have a little look on Twitter and things like that, and I'll try and stay up to date with that. And if anybody wants to send us anything, by all means, keep me in the loop, because I will be purely on a two-wheel mission, I think, for that particular 7 days. But
so I hope you're going across on two wheels.
No.
Disappointed.
No. I'm middle-aged now, and there's no way. I'm taking a motor home.
I'm sure you could have borrowed a Vespa from somebody.
I wanted one of those ones. You remember those little Honda ones that you used to have to pedal to get the VR one as well? That would have been quite good, but no. We're taking a motorhome over. We're doing it in a civilized way. And I learned very early in life that I wasn't suited to two wheels. That's all I'll say.
There is an amusing story from Mark Higgins and Martin Rowe about going to watch the Isle of Man TT on scooters, but that's best told by them, and we'll get one of them to tell us the story one day.
Yeah. We'll definitely get them on. Well, listen, I suppose we better wish you bon voyage and an enjoyable Rally Barbados, and enjoy the rum, enjoy the sun, and enjoy the rally cars.
Will do, and I'll try and get some of the gossip, bring some of the stories, and we'll have some of the excitement on the next show.
Well, hopefully, yeah, we'll get some bits and pieces. So we are away next week, but we'll be back the following week with a very, very busy programme from Rally Barbados. No doubt I'll have a tale or two from the TT. I can't help it. I know it's technically not rallying, but there's going to be a rally man there, so we'll do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've gone down this road on World RX now, haven't we? As long as there's a rallying theme to it, even if it's vaguely tenuous, we'll allow it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Right, on that two-wheeled and four-wheeled, I was nearly going to say bombshell then, but it went very Clarkson on me, and of course we don't do that anymore. Did you watch the new Top Gear?
I did. I thought they'd do something completely different, and they didn't. They did it just the same with different presenters, and for me, I think the jury's still out. Let's see.
Okay, I've not seen it yet, so I'm not gonna say that. But anyway, on that, on the end of the program, on the end of the podcast, I hope you've enjoyed our very podcast. Just as a little bit of a heads up for you, if you're listening to this bit, I genuinely have no idea what's gone in the bit before this because we recorded this bit first. So I have got no idea what you've listened to at the top of the program. We'll do the news and the stuff with Jack. Of course we do that at the top, but the bits in the middle are still yet to be decided, which is quite exciting because I've got an hour to do it. So if you've got to this point, I hope you've enjoyed what we've done anyway. Ryan Champion, have a safe rally Barbados, and we'll speak you the week after next.
Will do.
Thanks for the download, folks. You know where we live, @Absolute_Rally, of course, on Twitter and on Facebook. It's facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. And thanks for the download, and we'll see you in a week's time.